This podcast is sponsored by Finomatch, finding the most suitable donor with the matching tool for the best teams.
Hello, and welcome to the Fertility Conversations podcast. The goal of this podcast is to create more awareness about infertility and to provide support to people trying to conceive. Thank you for listening today, and we hope you will be encouraged. And now, here is your host, Ola.
Welcome to another episode of the Fertility Conversations podcast. Today, we're joined by a lovely guest, Rima Zagaitis. She is a mindset and MRKH coach that is dedicated to guiding women to accept and transform their relationship with their difficult diagnosis and live a life of wholeness. At just 16 years old, Rima was diagnosed with MRKH, a condition in which a person is born without a uterus, cervix, or vagina. Even after getting treatment, Rima struggled with her identity as a woman and her sense of self-worth. After carrying this diagnosis like a heavy secret for far too long, she embarked on her own personal healing journey to an empowered life, realizing that she didn't want any other girl to struggle alone like she did. Rima took her decade-long career in adult learning and professional coaching and dedicated it to working with women with MRKH and other difficult diagnoses. Today, Rima helps guide women to accept themselves fully and live a life of wholeness. So thank you so much, Rima, and welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yay. We usually start off by saying, tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, I know I've said a little bit about you, but you know, anything else that you want to share about yourself would be great.
I think you hit on the really big parts, but I think aside from that, on a personal note, I'm an avid cyclist. I love camping. My parents are from Lithuania, so I'm very active in the Lithuanian community here in Chicago.
Oh, nice.
And still participate in Girl Scouts and different activities like that. So
impressive.
A little bit about me. I'm fascinated by cultures and other languages. So I love to travel.
How many languages do you speak right now?
I speak three right now. I used to speak four, but one sort of faded.
Well, three is a lot. So you're doing much better than the average person. So well done.
Thanks.
So, I mean, you know that you, of course, noted that you have MRKH, which for many people don't even understand what the condition is. And you mentioned that you got diagnosed at the age of 16. How did you get diagnosed? What was the process of actually getting to know that this was something that you had?
So first, I might say for your listeners that MRKH stands for Meyer-Rokitansky-Kuster-Hauser syndrome. It's a combination of four doctors' names of who discovered it. It's right. Just easier to say MRKH.
Yeah.
So the typical way people get diagnosed is, you know, in your teen years as a girl, you're waiting to get your period. Mm-hmm. And I was waiting and waiting, and by 15 or 16, I hadn't gotten it yet. And so my mother suggested that we go to a gynecologist just to check it out. She didn't think anything was wrong, but why not go find out for sure? And so we went to the gynecologist, and he did a pelvic exam. And basically, he misdiagnosed me at the time. He thought it was an imperforate hymen, so that the hymen was too thick and just wasn't letting the period go through. And right. So through that, he decided we scheduled several times a week appointments, and he was going to break through the hymen for me.
Wow.
With a dilator. And so after several weeks of that, and that was really painful, he referred me to a specialist, a fertility specialist, and they did a laparoscopy, which is where they put a little needle inside and fill your abdomen with air, and they look around. And through the laparoscopy, they were able to identify that I didn't have a uterus, a cervix, and an upper vagina. So that's how I was diagnosed. So coming out of anesthesia is when my mother told me that I didn't have a uterus. I don't think she actually told me what the name of the condition was at that point. And so that's not, it's not uncommon to find out at around that time, right? Because if you're not getting your period, eventually you'll go to a doctor to find out why.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's a lot to learn at 16.
Of course.
And immediately, you know, I was coming out of anesthesia. My mother was there. My father was there. And she delivered the news. And I worried about her. I thought, you know, she was crying. I didn't want her to feel bad. I didn't want her to worry about me. And I think in that moment is really how I developed my coping mechanism of not feeling my own feelings, but worrying about what's outside. So worrying about her and other people. And after that, you know, we had an appointment where they explained the options. And in those days, really the focus was, we need to fix your vagina. You have to have a vagina. And so the options were two different kinds of surgeries. And they explained the surgeries and said, which one do you want? We have an opening next Tuesday.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so it was a pretty big rush. So I went on a second, so that already was the second opinion. So I went to a third doctor and a fourth doctor just to make sure that was what, you know, the recommended solution was. And mm-hmm. went to those appointments with my father and right. I can see your face. So to sit in an appointment first at 16, to be having multiple pelvic exams by grown men when I had never been exposed in that way to anybody, yeah. You know, I wasn't sexually active. It was a lot. It was, I don't know, traumatizing might be a strong word, but it was definitely really,
I think it is. I
you think it's a good word.
Yeah, I think so.
For sure. And so to sit then in the appointments and have one grown man explaining to another grown man what they wanted to do for my vagina. I just felt like I kept shrinking and shrinking. And on top of it, you know, I knew my father loved me, but he was a man of few words. So to have this conversation with him or in front of him was excruciating for me. I can only imagine it was excruciating for him as well. But those third and fourth opinions reinforced that, yes, you should have surgery. And so we booked the surgery, and it's a vaginal reconstructive surgery. And so you go through that. It's a pretty extensive surgery, and you're in recovery for about 10 days. And another hard part is that this was done at a teaching hospital. And so they bring in teams of residents.
Everybody
to come and check out this new unique procedure that the doctor just did. So it was a lot of little by little shrinking more into myself, just as a way to disconnect from what was happening to my body on the outside. And I think once the surgery was done, my doctor at the time, the surgeon, I feel like he was informed enough to know that, oh, we probably should probably need some help on the emotional, mental level. So he booked an appointment for me with a sex therapist at 16. So I went to the sex therapist, again, still at the teaching hospital. So she had a student with her observing this appointment. And her first question was, you know, how do you feel about not being able to have children? And, you know, by now I think I had fully disconnected from my body and all of those things. So I said, oh, I'm sure it'll bother me someday, but not right now. And from then on, I, you know, with the doctors, with my family, the problem was fixed. I had the surgery,
mm-hmm.
and then you can just go on. So for me, that lifelong journey of first realizing that it was impacting me, and then deciding what to do about it. So trying to find a good therapist or somebody to work with to help me work through those things that emotionally I was dealing with, it took a really long time, you know, to navigate those waters by myself. So luckily, I had come from a family. My mom believed in therapy. There was no stigma around that. Okay. So sort of off and on throughout my life, I tried to tackle that on my own.
Wow. I cannot even begin to imagine how traumatizing and difficult and isolating that must have been, the whole experience and all the teaching hospital experience as well. It's just, it's way too much in your teenage years. And of course, I imagine as well that even for the doctors and all of them, it was quite new and they didn't have a lot of information about it as well. So of course you needed therapy, but then referring to sex therapies, again, the focus was on just the sex aspect, which is what not what you needed at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume there was no one that you actually knew that had anything similar. So apart from the sex therapist, was there any other support apart from your family navigating that time in those teenage years, at least in the first few years?
No, not at all. So there was, I had come across it. So the statistics today are that 1 in 5,000 girls have MRKH. In those days, I came across an article where it had said 1 in 100,000.
Oh.
And so the statistics at that time were reported differently. And there, this was before the days of Google, so there was nothing to really search. And so I didn't know anybody else with MRKH. And really, up until 3 years ago, I had never met or talked to anybody else with MRKH. So that's a really long time to go without meeting or talking to anybody else that has it. So the, you know, I did seek out therapists throughout my life, and I would say probably about 10, 15 years ago is when I really connected with somebody that helped me the most. And so that's a lot of years, again, to find somebody that can sort of work through and help me understand what I was feeling and what I was dealing with. And that's really why I wanted to start Sumavi, which is my coaching business, to focus on those things, because I felt like it doesn't have to be that hard. It doesn't have to be such a solo journey. Yeah. And there are skills and strategies you can learn to help understand yourself, help understand your feelings, help get stronger with your confidence and all that. And so I really felt, since I had taken on that journey by myself and sort of puzzle pieced it together, that at least I can guide people through that a little bit. There are, probably about 10 years ago, a non-for-profit was started that focuses on MRKH called Beautiful You, and they have done incredible things in terms of awareness and funding studies and creating. They really started the MRKH community. Yeah. And so we actually do have one now, if you're on Instagram, or there's Facebook groups. And I was lucky enough to connect with them, and we do a lot of collaborations. I think before them, there really wasn't much there. But by the 10 years ago, by the time they started, I had stopped searching for support because I had gone decades figuring it out on my own. So,
yeah. Thank you so much for sharing, and well done on starting Sumavi, because again, it is very important, as you know, to be able to connect with anyone that even has an idea of what it feels like. And with the stats of 1 in 5,000, that's millions of people globally that could potentially be feeling lost and not even understanding what is happening.
Mm-hmm. Right? It really feels much more rare than 1 in 5,000, because it affects such a private part of your body that people don't really talk about, obviously, people don't talk about it openly. You're not going to be at a coffee shop and look over, you know, the girl next to you may have it, but you would never know because we don't talk about it. It's very private. And so it makes sense that it feels more isolating than it has to be.
Which is amazing why, I mean, again, it's part of the reasons why you created Somavi, right? So can you tell us more about Somavi and what you do and how you support people?
So yeah, I am actually super excited about it. So I took my coaching skills and I thought the world does not need another corporate trainer, but we sure can use some help in this department. I can use my skills here to make a difference. And there are three different ways that I try to support the community. First, through one-on-one coaching. Mm-hmm. I have a 4-month program where I meet one-on-one with people and we really go deep into understanding what, you know, you start to create a mindset about yourself and certain stories that might impact you. Things like, oh, I'm not good enough, or I'm not worth it, or nobody will love me this way. And then we start to believe those stories. And then we start to live our lives in a way that reinforces that story. So through coaching, I really try to work on building awareness around what story have you created for yourself that is holding you back. And then moving to reframing that and finding ways to look for evidence of that new version of yourself that is more in line with what the truth is, that in fact, you're perfect the way you are, whether you have surgery or no surgery, or if you do nothing, it doesn't matter, that, you know, finding that strength from within, finding a way to let go of the outside noise, maybe comments that other people may make or experiences that you have, and then working on some strategies that help you get through different life situations. How can you go to a baby shower and not have a meltdown because all your friends are having babies, or things like that? So it's really working from the inside out. So that's one way, and that's really powerful. And I really see the benefits in people. And then the other way is I run, it's like a group membership where we do group coaching. And so we meet every week and people dial in from all over the world, all over the US and the UK and Europe and Africa and Australia, Hawaii, all kinds of places. And we work through the same things. But in addition, it's this community, because there's so much healing that comes from sharing your story and finally giving it some light. Because for most of the people, most of us that have MRKH, we've kept quiet for so long out of shame or embarrassment or privacy, maybe without the heavy weight of shame, but giving your experience a voice and having people who get you and understand you and support you listen to it is so powerful. And simply by getting used to speaking about some of those words and bringing your story to light, you get stronger. And then we work on some of those same skills, but just as a group.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting. And for the people that come regularly, they create an amazing bond with people. I can see they get stronger. They're, you know, one girl recently said that she feels so much more comfortable in a romantic relationship bringing it up.
Right.
A big debate is, when do I bring this big news up in a relationship? And she feels stronger now from having attended our group coaching. So I also bring in guest experts. So we have really intimate time with pelvic floor therapists and specialists in gynecology and other therapists. And, you know, part of, I think how you started to mention, not having access to resources can be a huge challenge. So I bring in different experts and other healing modalities, like we do sound baths and meditation. So all like the head, mind, body, soul, we sort of work at it all. So it's really exciting.
And very important. Yeah.
I fully believe that. You know, we work on energy work, how to clear your energy, and all the while getting informed about MRKH, understanding it better, and learning how not to have it drive your life decisions, drive your personality, drive your behavior. It doesn't have to. It can be just something that's a part of your life.
Yeah.
And then that's the third way is I try to do things with the community. For example, this Saturday, I'm having an open workshop online. It's a group coaching workshop for anybody in the MRKH community. They don't have to be in my membership. And I brought in a team of coaches, and we're going to do like breakout groups and helping bring coaching to the forefront so people can get familiar with it and the benefits of it.
Oh, that's amazing. Is that virtual even?
It's virtual. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Same as my group. So even though actually everything's virtual, I think after the pandemic, everybody got so used to exactly. being virtual that I'm in Chicago, but none of my clients are. Mm-hmm. They're all over the place. So the one-on-one coaching is virtual. The weekly group coaching membership is virtual. And then these webinars that I do, I would say like 4 times a year online for the broader community.
Yeah.
That's all virtual too.
It's amazing. Well done. You're doing such great work. And it's Thank you. Important because, you know, this can have such a huge impact even on your mental health. And so having that right support with other people that understand and even listening to their stories, how they've navigated their own journeys, that can make such a huge difference. Listening to the experts you're bringing in, that makes a huge difference. You know, you might have even young girls still as a teenager wondering how do they manage the fact that they're not getting periods and all their friends are talking about having the sanitary pads in their pockets. Do they act like they all having the periods as well, or do they tell them the truth, or, you know, whatever the situation is, it's nice to be able to talk to others who have gone through those experiences that can help guide you.
You're exactly right. I think the younger people that come really learn a lot from the older people. Exactly. And the older people, like myself, you know, we came up through the generation where there wasn't any support. So simply being there, and when you're talking to other women that have their life together and are amazing people.
Yes.
It's such a good reminder that it doesn't have to hold you back like that. But it takes work and it takes practice to unlearn some of those ways, those coping mechanisms that, you know, get really solidified in our personality so quickly before we even realize it, right. Either culturally or from our family or just the experience you went through. So to be in a group where you're seeing other women navigate a life with MRKH is a really beautiful experience because it gives other people hope too. And then you get hope at the same time.
Yes. So well said. And you know you're not alone.
Which That's is so important, crucial. Right? It really is. When you think you're alone is probably the scariest thing.
Yeah.
And really, we never are, but we just have to find a way to believe it.
Yeah. So in your opinion, and we know with all your experience and having navigated your own personal journey and now helping so many other people across the globe, what do you think needs to be done in the society as a whole to ensure that more girls and women with MRKH have a better experience? And this is a global issue anyway, so what should we be doing as a society, or parents or teachers or schools? What can we all do?
I think there's a couple different things we can do. First, sort of on the first level, when you first go to a doctor, whether it's a family doctor or gynecologist, for those doctors to realize, oh, this is sort of the boundary of what I know, and have them know that there are specialists that you can refer people to. because those are the people that are educated in it, can help. They are, you know, they're usually pediatric and adolescent gynecologists, and they're informed in the different types of differences that show up in your reproductive tract. MRKH is just one of many that happen. And so that's the first step, is helping inform doctors that these specialists exist and it's okay to refer your patient to them.
Yes.
So that's the first step. And I think definitely the second step is helping people understand that, okay, we need to eat healthy. We need to exercise to make sure our bodies fit. And we need to see a coach or a therapist to make sure our mind is fit.
Yes.
And that it's just an equal part of how we take care of ourselves. And yeah, and I think that's so important. Like, oh, of course, you know, my body needs it. You're not going to go to the gym one time and think you're good for life. You're not going to eat one salad and then live on potato chips and think you're going to be healthy the rest of your life. So same with your mind. We all need to learn different ways, have a different perspective of thinking and different strategies, mindfulness, all kinds of things. And so my dream would be that, you know, having a gym, having a nice healthy meal, and having a coach or a therapist is what everybody is doing. So that I think is really important. And I also think, like you mentioned, in schools, it's important that I think when kids are being taught about the body, that they're taught about variations.
Yes.
And so they're informed, even though, you know, the statistics may be higher or lower, but the fact that this is one way the body develops and these are some other possible variations. And so when they do learn about a friend having a difference in their body that developed differently, it's not a shock. It's not weird. It's not anything other than, okay, that's the way Rima is. Oh, okay, that's the way Ola is, whatever the situation. And so starting that sort of open-mindedness at a younger age, I think is really helpful.
Oh, great tips. I think that for sure, if we can implement these changes, things can be much better and the younger generation can have it much easier than many of us have had it. So thank you so much for sharing. And again, like you said, for the high schools, I mean, people learn from when they're young that there's nothing bad, it's just different. Then we are better able to support each other, regardless of whatever diagnosis we all have. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
I do think it's getting better with the younger generations, but we can, there's still a long way to go. So I'm hopeful that we'll get there.
Yeah, but isn't it getting better because of what you're doing and other supports?
I hope so. I mean, I hope it's making a difference.
Yeah, because you're raising the awareness, you're educating people. Someone sees your post or attends one of your sessions and then tells the next person. And then people know, well, there's support out there. And then there's more education and awareness.
And the surprising thing is, so I didn't talk about this publicly for, you know, most of my life, but when I started talking about it, I was shocked at how many people said, oh, I have a friend who has that. Oh, my niece has something similar. And so I do think once it becomes less taboo in conversation, that it's a little bit easier to surface those things. And so I think you're right. Just the awareness. And that's why I appreciate having this opportunity to talk to you, because it adds to that. You know, if one more person hears this and realizes, oh, there's support for me, or I have something similar, maybe, you know, maybe I can talk to Rima and she can help me cope with it.
Exactly. And I see how Rima is living a full, loving life and she's having a great time. So perhaps I can do that as well.
Right.
Perhaps
there's hope for all of us.
There's hope. Yes. Thank you. And for anyone wanting to reach out to you, Rima, and wanting to join Smavi, what's the best way to connect with you?
Definitely, you can go to my website, which is sumavi.com, and I'll spell that sumaavi.com. Or on Instagram at Sumavi_trustedcircle.
Okay.
Those are the two best ways. So I'm constantly posting about coaching opportunities, upcoming webinars, meetups, anything like that. So you'll be well informed if you follow me on Instagram or go to the website for the mailing list.
That's amazing. I'll put all the details as well in the show notes. And we'll also, I believe you said that you have something coming up within next week or so.
Yes. Right? So big news in the MRKH community. There was a film that was just released last Friday, a feature film called Fitting In, directed by Molly McGlynn. And it's about a girl who has MRKH. And that was exciting. There's been a lot of hype in the MRKH community, but it also brought up a lot of feelings watching somebody else and being reminded of what you went through. And so this workshop I'm hosting on Saturday is to sort of help talk through and or process the emotions came up for anybody that went to see the film. I'm excited about that. It's actually the first time we've had, there's been an event like this where I'm bringing in a team of coaches. And so everybody will get support. So I'm very excited about it.
Well done. So needed. Thank you. Thank you.
You for all your work too.
Thank you. And if you could go back in time, you know, Rima now is doing such great work, right? You're supporting so many people. You're sharing your story. You're helping to destigmatize MRKH. You're getting to let people know that they're not alone. If you could go back to that time, perhaps Rima at 20, what would you tell her, seeing what you've seen now and how well you're doing?
First, I might cry a little bit, but I would give her a big hug and say, you're doing great, that everything's going to work out and you can put it down. You can put the weight down. It doesn't have to be heavy. That's what I would say. So you will have this amazing life. Mm-hmm.
So well said, because it must have been really scary those years.
Mm-hmm. I think it is scary. So, but in looking back too, I don't think I would trade it, because I think it was that path and everything I went through to get stronger that really created who I was and created the personality and the life that I have. So I'm thankful for that. And I think if it weren't MRKH, it would have been another challenge in my life. We all have them. And so it's up to us to what we do with that, those challenges.
Thank you. So well said.
Thank you.
And are there any words of affirmation that you found helpful through the years that you'd like to share?
There were some, you know, there was one. I think one of the biggest challenges of having something like MRKH when it affects such a personal part of your body is somehow you feel shameful about it and that it affects your self-worth and things like that. And then that idea of keeping it a secret and what if people find out is such a big burden. Yeah. And I realized that one of the things that I said to myself and continue to say once I learned how to work through that is that you're safe and it's safe to be seen. It's safe to be seen. And that doesn't mean, you know, it wasn't just until recently that I'm talking that publicly about it. Nobody has to go announce it to the world. Mm-hmm. But because there is a difference between something that's a secret and something that's private.
Yes.
So it's the same information, just one is way heavier and destructive. The secret is destructive. But if you can decide your private information is who it's for and who's worth sharing, who's trustworthy, but that it's safe because you know how to recover, even if something goes badly, that you are safe with yourself. So the information, the affirmation that I still say oftentimes before going to sleep is, it's safe to be seen.
Love it. It's safe to be seen. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Such powerful words. Thank you. And as a wrap up, Rima, if there's some one young girl or many listening to you right now who has just discovered that they have MRKH, do you have any word of encouragement to share with them?
I feel like we need another hour for the words of encouragement, but I think if I were to keep it brief, I would say that you're perfect the way you are, and you can have the life that you want, and you're not alone. There is support for you, whether it's with me or the broader MRKH community is so loving and supportive that we get you, and you don't need to do it alone.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Rima, for coming here today to speak about your journey. It was certainly not an easy one, finding out that that age and of course how things were. Thank you for choosing to share and raise awareness, and then to use your experience and the strength you've built over the years to now support so many other girls and women across the globe. Thank you for doing that. It is making such a huge difference, and the impact you're making cannot be measured. So I hope you know that you're making a change across the globe, and you're touching lives and you're impacting families.
Thank you. I hope so. And I appreciate you having this platform. So to be able to further the awareness, I really appreciate that.
Thank you. So we'll be definitely putting all your details in the show notes.
Okay.
And also raising awareness about the upcoming workshop and the supports that you provide at Sumavi. Thank you for all that you're doing, and we look forward to having you again in the near future.
Thank you, Ola.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Fertility Conversations podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating and subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at Fertility Conversations. If there are any topics you would like to have discussed, please send an email to fertilityconversations@gmail.com. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. Thank you again for listening. Take care of yourself and do stay hopeful.